Hello, welcome. You're listening to episode number 35 of Inglourious Artists, and I am Peter Holland, your host. And today I'm going to be talking to this person.
Hello, my name's Jim High. I'm an actor and improviser. I'm currently appearing as Ulrich in Nightfall and Fergus in Carnival Row. And I'm in Bez Viadomi from HBO Europe as well. I'm also the founder and run Blood, Love and Rhetoric Theatre and Comedy Club.
Jim Ladd.
PDP.
PDP? Oh, that's not good. Oh, anyway.
I think Soldier 2 as well, no?
Soldier 2.
Yeah.
Why do we have to keep getting things that is like a job and a number?
Yeah, most of my IMDb is a rank and then a number. So it's like...
Is it that bad? I mean, I see a lot of names as well.
There's a few names now, yeah, that's, yeah, good. That's good. Yeah. Mm. And it's not bad at all. I mean, the fact that soldiers and armies appear in films so much is being bread and butter.
So you might look a little bit militaristic.
I think there's a Dr. Johnson quote that I always carry on with me, that every man thinks less of himself for not having been a soldier. That does kind of resonate with me. I don't think I would have done very well in the army, but...
No, but on screen,
On screen, yeah, it looks great. But I do feel a little bit kind of... less of a man. I've got a great respect for people who did serve in the military, perhaps overly.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, but, you should do.
I've done a couple of people in uniforms as well.
And yeah.
To me, it's kind of laughable because I didn't even go through and went to the army and anything like that. And I've been kind of anti-military in some ways,
sure,
and anti-authoritarian in some ways. And so when people go like, well, yeah, you're a good military guy in a film. Really?
Right.
Okay. Because I get that, or like an artist, or like a vampire or something. It's not in the same wheelhouse, really.
Well, that's all right. You're covering a few options there.
Yeah.
Did you have to do service then? Or you do public service or something?
Back when I was at that age, it was mandatory in Sweden.
Right.
And I got out of it because in the day when they picked you out, they was like, they found out that I have a small scoliosis situation with my back, and
really?
They just said you can't march hours a day.
Well, right,
I can't.
There we go. Please.
I had no idea. No, I didn't want to do it. Yeah, so it was like score. Kind of.
So did you have to do something else or
no.
Oh, really? Okay.
No. So what did I do? I just became unemployed and tried to get into the culture.
A burden on society. Yeah, a drain.
Exactly. I've been more a drain to society than I've been a man in a uniform, let's say.
Right. Yeah.
Trying to pay some of that back sometimes.
I had a day on this Shadow Play, is a show shooting out here at the moment. It's by the same writer as the same writer as The Bridge.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Which The Bridge? The Swedish?
The Swedish
one? I did a small thing on that one, yeah.
Really? They're super cool, those guys, Lars and Mads, I think.
Right,
is,
Mads is the writer. Those names do ring a bell. Yeah.
Yeah, they work as a sort of co-op director. But what I was going to say is a couple of the lead actors who are playing soldiers did some service in Sweden, so I think that kind of fell in. They're both sergeants, I think.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know how much that informs it.
That is kind of unusual, because most of the actors that actually work in Sweden, they have been going through the whole School of Dramatic Arts kind of thing, the national one we have.
Right.
And that's changing now, and it's in the past been kind of a bit of a problem, because you really get taught to be very theatrical when you go there. And so we don't have that big of a film and TV industry in the past, at least. So, and when you get the professional actors from Sweden to do that, sometimes you can tell that you work better on stage, probably. But that's really changing now, when the whole globalization and cinema and TV, it's just permeating everything. And we start to be cast more by how we, you know, look and are, you know.
Although, I mean, you won't like this, I don't think, but like with Bergman and stuff, that's kind of the dawn of modern film acting in a lot of ways. That kind of,
you know,
I mean, it is stylized, I guess, and you, I know you've talked to me about how the Swedish is actually kind of like high. It's kind of like it's literary kind of Swedish, or it sounds sort of poetical or something like that. Maybe
in a Bergman film.
In a Bergman film. Yeah.
Well, if you we're talking about the Seventh Seal, then yeah, but right. But if it's set in more modern times, it's different. No,
but just those hanging on people, he would do. You know, just a single shot hanging on somebody and letting the actor kind of just be open and just watching their face be open.
I think that's
kind of. I mean, obviously other people were doing it, but like that comes out of there. So I'm just saying.
I think you might be true, but I haven't really thought about that.
You know?
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, I did a workshop with a guy recently, David Penn, I think his name is, who's about film acting, and his whole thing is called The Open Face, which is a quote from Liv Ullmann, because she said when she worked with Bergman, something along the lines of like, she couldn't be pretending and she couldn't be hiding. She just had to be open.
Yeah.
The whole rabbit hole of acting stuff. Right. But like...
practically, what does the open face mean to...
Well, when I figure that out, I'll be made, but...
it's one of those classes. Okay.
Well, I think it's long... Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it's one of those... No, he's very good, actually. I'd highly recommend him. Although most acting classes, you kind of tend to come out with a skip in your step, going, oh, this is great, I've sussed it, and then 3 days later, it all kind of doesn't make any more sense.
No. Why did we do that thing?
Yeah. But, and he was, I mean, I've been joking, I've been teaching at the film school lately. I've been teaching
audition I heard that. Yeah,
I got away with it. I was joking with that, like the majority of acting classes, because, you know, especially these guys were young, and like actors are vulnerable by their nature and by necessity. Like, you have to be vulnerable, and I think that's the point.
That's openness in another way, yeah.
Yeah.
Just keep up.
So in terms of like opportunity to screw them over with teaching, I've seen so many classes because I didn't go to a school, and I've kind of picked stuff up all over the place. I've probably got my antenna and senses up a bit higher than others, maybe because that's where I've got all my stuff. But so many classes where the teacher will get you up to demonstrate something. So you set up for a fall, then they'll basically rip into that and say that's awful and sort of destroy yourself. And then they'll introduce their bullshit technique, which will be something, you know, like act from the heart or whatever. And then they'll get you to do it again. And then they'll tell you you're wonderful and you're amazing.
And
it's probably because you've been using their technique. It's the break them down and build them back up again in your own image. But say, and I mean, that happens in all types of teaching, of course, but because, you know, acting's so nebulous and difficult to put your finger on, and because of that nature, you know, the students are sort of like vulnerable.
Yeah, but
it's open, but I didn't do that, so.
But what are you teaching in the school?
I was teaching audition techniques.
Ah,
yeah.
Really good. And that's something you do know a lot about by this time.
Yeah. I guess, yeah. It was useful for me to sort of formulate my thoughts on it. I mean, because and practically teaching it as well, I just, with tips and techniques, rather than just sitting there going, be more real, you know, it's not very helpful. But it was interesting.
But are you talking about things like what to think about Riemann before you enter the room?
Yeah, well, I took, I really like, I know you're going to interview Nancy Bishop, but I really like her casting director. I really like her quote, I think it's she uses it in Casting Couch, but go in with a polite fuck you, which I thought was great. Just in terms of like, well, be polite, be civil, be nice, of course, but just know that you are the guy.
Don't grovel, you know.
Don't grovel. It's not a good look.
Go in. I usually say this: go in assuming that you got the part, so you're just going to show what you plan to do.
Yeah.
And then when you leave, assume that you didn't get the part, so you everything's positive from then on. If you get it, that's great. Yeah. You know.
Which is why when we were talking about earlier that when your agent phones you up to tell you they really like you, it's. Can be a nightmare, and just leaves you in a mad headspace.
And also, you start to wonder how much of that did my agent make up,
right? And did they like me, or did they like my performance, or
or didn't they say that at all? And my agent's just like, "It's great."
Just interpreted a silence. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the other one. I mean, this went viral. Well, I guess kind of viral, but there was Bryan Cranston talking about coming out of castings and saying, just going, being able, like when he made the change to, like you said, go in and show what you've got. Mm. So when he made the change of like shifting this thing rather than going in there and trying to get the job, yeah, but going in there and just demoing what he's got. And that comes from, you know, we're all lazy dilettante actors, but from prep. Mm. So if you can go in there, show them what you do, and then you can leave and forget about it. But it's just, you've got to nail it to your standard. You know, it's the worst thing is coming out of a casting feeling like you could have done it better. That's when you start playing in your head. You can get into lost and trick yourself with stuff like that if you're being insecure about it. But sometimes you know. Sometimes you know you dropped things. That's a horrible feeling. So just trying to eliminate that, you know.
Yeah, but I think like 8 times out of 10, I feel like that probably. It's just right. Those two are like, yeah, that was exactly what I hoped to do and it felt right. And I could see in the eyes of the reader or whatever that they were like, yeah, they're with you and everything, but, you know, because can mess you up as well. You know?
Well, yeah, but you shouldn't be going off the reader, you know?
Like, you shouldn't go off, but sometimes you can think about what was their reaction to what I...
Sure.
Because sometimes the reader might be the actual casting director.
Sure, yeah.
You can almost see in them like, huh, already when you do it. This is...
I hear you, and like, I mean... But I would say that's a, and I certainly do the same, but like I would say that's the kind of danger is to cut that out. Yeah. And it's the other thing of playing to the camera and not, you know, not the room, which can be quite difficult sometimes, especially like, I mean, they're different, but like commercial casting, sometimes you go in and there's like 15 people on Apple Macs and wearing hats and being cool and chatting and it's, you know, but that's commercial, isn't it? It's different, so
yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah, the demands are totally different and so strange. It's just got to realize that everybody's going to be just as humiliated as you feel like right now. And
I've had some demeaning commercial castings. But I mean, most of them boil down to, okay, you haven't got the product and you're not great. Okay, now you have the product and you're great. You just have to smile. Mm-hmm. But I had a casting once for a German... It was a German pet shop called... Yeah, I know. It was a good shoot, actually. I had a penguin strapped to me, and we were green screening me carrying a penguin as a treat. Like, that was, you know, treating all the animals to what they'd like. So presumably a penguin would love to fly. I think they're happy enough as they are. But anyway, so I had a penguin strapped to my and green screen and fans blown as I was flying a hang glider. It's great when the guy... They had two penguins, and the guy strapped it onto my chest. He was like... careful, they'll go for the face. And it's like thrashing around in front of me. But for the casting for that, I had a German, very strict German director who, when I went in for the casting, he was like, okay, give me a new, just staring at camera, just give me a neutral face. Okay, now give me a slight smile. Now give me a bigger smile. Now full smile. Now bigger smile. Now take it down, less of a smile. Now take it back up. Take it down, up, up. And it was like 30 seconds, a minute of that.
Yeah.
And I got the job off the back of it. So,
all right.
But I would say that is essentially every commercial casting in it.
Dance Monkey,
boiled
dance.
Down to. Yeah, yeah. Well, he just wanted that, you know, can you look happy?
Right.
Which I can sometimes. Obviously, that's it's acting for me, but yeah.
No. I think it comes naturally to you. It doesn't to me, really. As soon as I smile, things just fall apart.
Oh, really? Yeah, right.
It's not great. what was the commercial that was so beautiful? I think you were in a space suit.
That was good. That was an obscure thing because it was... I think it played in the United Arab Emirates or somewhere, but it was for DU Telecom and they were doing some deal with cinemas.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and it was quite funny as well in its own way. It was, the mistake of Interstellar, you mean?
Was that what it was? Yeah. I just remember you in a spacesuit.
I used it on my showreel tried to make it look like a serious thing, where it's actually very... the whole thing's actually very silly, but yeah.
Mm. But I saw that you do list your commercials on IMDb, like extra credits, and I don't do that myself, though.
No, I've got a few there, but I couldn't be bothered to go through. I've forgotten a lot.
Yeah, I mean, okay, it's...
arrogant, but I've forgotten.
There's a lot already, but you have done more than that, so yeah.
Yeah, I've done a lot of commercial. I think it's changing a bit in Prague now, the commercial market. I don't know, but because they film so many international films. I think that's quite unusual. So like, I think if you're casting for commercials in the UK, say, or in America, you'll generally only be casting for UK or American commercials.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's people come from all over the place. So like, I've had commercials in Ukraine, Korea, just all over the shop, which, you know, so you just get the chances here.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because there's at least 5 casting offices here that just do that.
Yeah, yeah, quite. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's a good idea to be on all of their lists.
Yeah, yeah.
But, totally. But I also noticed that lived here, when I was on the couple of those lists, it's like they sent everything out to you, even though you weren't really the type.
And right.
That felt kind of strange. You showed up like, yep, you wanted me to be here. And they were like, I suppose, but you're supposed to be playing this. That's not really me, right? No, maybe. You know, they just throw the net so wide.
Yeah.
And that's kind of annoying because it's your time. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Some have definitely got a reputation for that. I won't name names. But the good thing about commercials, I was going to say, just relating to what we were talking earlier about going into castings, is you do get drilled into exactly that about type. Yeah. So you get, you know, I've lost plenty of commercials because my hair colour's wrong, or I'm too short, or too tall, or something like that. Yeah. So you have that kind of drummed into you. And because it's such simple castings, you know, you don't really have to do anything. Mm. You know it's just that. Mm. So that's a useful thing to take to the, you know, the actual serious castings of film and TV, that you might be too tall for the actor, like short ass stars. But
they can be on Apple boxes. Come on,
yeah. I think just short people just look better on film. Like, I think body proportions look. We're kind of trained for it.
Sometimes when I see my full body on screen, horrific. It feels like it's kind of gangly city, you know. Like, really? Should things be that long and thin? No, really. Yeah. And at the same time, they say that the camera adds like 10 pounds or whatever it is, you know.
So God
knows. How bad is it?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Talking about your hair, I mean, when you go to the other side of the, not commercials, but like film and TV and stuff, it seems like you have been having to been wearing a lot of wigs.
I've lucked out on wigs. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've really lucked out on wigs.
They're beautiful things.
They're great. I really like it. Yeah.
In like things like the Musketeers, right?
They gave me, I mean, I had a tiny part in Musketeers and they gave me a nice, long, luxurious wig.
Right. And then in
Nightfall, playing the Templar Knight Ulrich. Mm. Had lovely. I had 3 different wigs for that. It kept evolving, but all of them were lovely. The first one was kind of blonde and more heroic. It got lanker more medieval as it went on. They tried to make it more realistic. But yeah, it's great having hair. Yes.
Exactly. When you start to get rid of it, not by choice, but you start to feel like, well, can I just do parts when they actually put some beautiful, luxurious hair on my head? Probably not. But, you know.
It's funny that stuff as well, because you know, it does obviously make you look so different.
Oh yeah.
And again, that's not something, I don't know. It's lucky when that happens, because you know, that's not something that's really anticipated in the casting or whatever. They're just kind of confident enough with their makeup artists that they and their.
Right. Well, usually they are brilliant.
Oh, they are. That's totally. The guys on Nightfall.
When I sit down in a makeup chair in a big production, I'm like, okay,
yeah,
do what you do best.
They're amazing. I got to wear some. I was in a film which working title was Devil, I think, but I don't know if that's going to be the actual release. But I played a demon in that, so I had a full on. I don't know what it's made of, but sort of latexy mask thing.
Probably not latex, because what I've heard is that they don't really use latex anymore. Yeah. There are better stuff now.
Right, it was some composite or something. Mm-hmm. But that was a lot of fun. They gave me contact lenses and teeth as well.
And like with a slit?
They were like black. They made,
the sclero thing, I've worn those as well. They're so uncomfortable.
These are all right, actually. I don't wear contact lenses at all, so I was terrified about it, but they were fine.
Yeah. Well, okay, but they actually probably fit them to you.
And maybe.
I had like
maybe
store bought from the shelf, put these in. Like, really? Ouch.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that, yeah. I don't know, we'll see how it comes out. It's funny what kind of happens to you. When you're wearing one of those masks, and not really masks, like what happens to your acting? Because you can watch yourself in the mirror, and it's the more preparation time you can get with it, it's great. You watch yourself in the mirror and kind of see how things play out. But then when you're wearing it, just the feel of it dictates what you kind of do with your face. So it's and again, it's the same thing. If like you're not, some movements read and some movements of your face will read through the mask and others won't. They get completely lost in it.
Yeah.
Because it's almost a kind of, I was watching bits of the new Star Trek, just kind of flicking through people in ridiculous mask things. And there's almost a kind of style to that acting that kind of comes out of those masks. Like people come, I think, you know, it naturally makes you more aware of your head movements and your body movements because you're kind of doing stuff with that. But
what I find interesting in that show is what they've done with the Klingons now. And it feels like everybody who is playing a Klingon on that show are so amazing in just finding that whole thing that makes them not human.
And they
also have to speak Klingon in that really, they've started to speak Klingon with almost like a subhuman or like extraterrestrial way that they didn't do in the previous iterations of Star Trek and stuff like that. But you can see how they like move and have this really strange kind of, you know, voices that fits to. It's so impressive.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's interesting that kind of, I think they did it pretty well in Nightfall, but just, I mean, aliens and making something alien, but historical stuff, trying to get to the kind of nub of, like people were different then. And so it's nice when historical pieces, I think, have something changes in the performance. The main guys of Nightfall kind of did that. You see it in Vikings, the main guy in Vikings, the original, I can't remember his name now, but it's the same guys as Nightfall, so I kind of watched it. But they had, all the other actors have kind of taken on his style. Who played Ragnar? He just had this kind of, I guess it's what he does, but he just had this kind of wildness to him. And he looked, he's just not of our time, you know. And that was good. And that seems to have really affected all the other acting in that show. But you've got to have that boldness to do it. And
yeah,
it's
but kind
not
of
always
like the people
on.
Who are wildlings in Game of Thrones as well.
A little bit. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Some raggedy.
Yeah.
Wild stuff.
The free folk, please.
I used the W word. You shouldn't have done that, of course.
Yeah. Did you enjoy the end of Game of Thrones? Or did you?
I'm 50-50, I would say. And I think they did a lot with it. I think they should have taken more time, probably.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Yeah,
yeah, that's probably it.
It was kind of rushed, even though they had more budget.
Yeah, sure. I spent it on battles, which were amazing, quite dark as well. But yeah,
but yeah, the long night was hard to see, hard to watch for reasons you might not expect. Do you have a wig in Carnival Row?
I have a wig in Carnival Row.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
I got it's
and
another
you, you're
red
allowed to
head.
Talk about it.
I'm gonna. Yes, I am. I'm going to post a photo of it soon, which we'll see if the gods of production swoop down upon me, but I don't think they will. Just that thing you're not supposed to, you know, you can't release stuff from before the show's out, but I think it'd be... Yeah, it's a big, poofy red wig, and it's glorious, so... Yeah.
Alrighty.
Yeah, I already miss it.
Are you human?
I'm human. I'm a human... I'm a human butler to a fawn.
Oh, okay.
So that's the twist on that, insofar as usually the humans have fawns as butlers or other kind of fey creatures that inhabit that world.
And most of the creatures, that's practical with makeup and stuff, most of it, and some wings and stuff added on later, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how much... Yeah, exactly. They've got centaurs in there. Apparently they were CGI heavy.
So
it looks great. The show looks amazing.
What I've seen, absolutely.
We'll see. It's one of those. you know, it's got to land tonally. Mm. It's so far out, could go either way. But I think it looks great. The script's great. Mm. The acting's great. I was with David Gyasi. He was my Fawn master, I guess. And he's awesome. He's wonderful.
I just saw a picture of him today, I think.
He's a
dark skinned guy with the horns.
Yeah, the horns kind of come out of the head. Yeah,
coming basically from the cheekbones.
Yeah, it's an interesting design.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and he had, he's got, I don't know, you can't see it from that photo, but he's got, you know, goat legs.
Yeah, of course. Fawn.
Yeah.
But how is that to act with? I mean, it's got to help to set yourself in the world, but is it like, do you have to overcome a level of freakiness because your character know that this character well? So it's every day for your character, but to you, it might be like, what the fuck? Look at that guy.
Yeah, that's funny. Actually, I guess the first time I saw it, it was like, wow. But then it never was an issue afterwards. I mean, there's so much far out stuff going on a film set, and it's so, you know, there's so many distractions and things. Mm. It didn't really come up. But no, I mean, I maybe will watch it, and in every shot I'll be mouth open and eyes wide, just staring. And
I don't
amazed,
think they would use those
not.
Shots.
Yeah, I think they might edit those out. So, but it is a very, very impressive show. It's a very impressive looking show, like in terms of it's wild. The amount of, like, you know, the stages they built at Barrandov and things they've used, and they, you know, it's not the characters, the fake creatures aren't limited to the main cast. It's all extras are all made up and stuff. Oh, yeah. And it's quite a world.
Is everything shot here? Exteriors, interiors, everything.
I think so.
Oh right. Okay,
yeah,
I think so.
It's quite a large back lot up at. You can go. It was funny because Nightfall has the back lot up at Barrandov Studios as well. So you could walk from medieval Paris to Carnival Row. It's just 30 seconds.
That is amazing.
But yeah, it's
when
impressive.
When you know those things, it's kind of interesting.
It's funny. Yeah.
When I realized when you and I shot Snowpiercer, that they were shooting Selena at the same time, I think.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, so they were just next over. So I'm like, okay, right. So Jennifer Lawrence is over there. Yeah. We got Tilda here.
That's nice, yeah.
But you were on Selena as well.
Oh,
so you were like, yeah.
Sorry. I had a moment on that. I played a woodcutter,
I think.
I think it was, I should be lumberjack, I guess, but I think I put my own entry in for IMDb there. I don't think I'm credited on the film. I hand Bradley Cooper a box at one point.
Right. No, your list is uncredited, so I suppose not.
So you can see me if you really try. But they were impressive to watch working at Bradley Cooper.
Oh, of course.
Yes. Yeah, so Snowpiercer set was amazing. Whilst I've seen loads of great backlots in terms of something shot in a soundstage like that, I haven't seen anything quite as impressive as that.
All the train carts were in there. Cars were in there, and three rows with three cars per studio. And I guess they had like three studio buildings, something like that.
Right, probably. Yeah.
And you and I kind of got the short end of the stick because we saw just the early one, so we didn't see the beautiful, super out there sets from later on in the film. But,
yeah. Although that was a nice surprise to see them in the actual film. But yeah, that was a cool film. That was really interesting to be on and really interesting to watch.
It was. And we got the movement.
Start the gimbal.
Actual moving train cars.
Yeah, it's incredible. Yeah, we should say. I mean, they built train tracks, the actual trains in the studio, and they moved. Crazy set. I've got to see his new film. I've got Parasite.
Yeah, it's been very well received.
It's been very well pumped all
Have you seen Okja, though? I haven't seen Okja yet either.
Oh, no, I haven't watched that. Yeah.
The big controversy one in Cannes because it was a Netflix released film and they were like no, you gotta have been in the cinema at one point or another so they changed the rules after the fact when it came to that one.
I see. Yeah, well, Snowpiercer had loads of distribution problems, didn't it?
Oh yeah, it did. So it was delayed in the States for a year.
Weinstein company. Yeah.
Yes, the not at all infamous Mr. Weinstein.
Director Bong was not happy with him, was he? In a way, that played out. I mean, obviously, they could have made more on it, but because, you know, it played in the States, and then everybody is because it's the type of film that gets pirated as well. you know, it's a sci-fi.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so it's not good for it to be released a year earlier. And
yeah, it was like other, a year, yeah. So, and, but it worked out in so far as it kind of gave it a cult status, I think. People sort of discovered it later.
It did, yeah.
So,
but that thing hurt me kind of as well, because I went back to Sweden, and I think Sweden's cinema system is more connected to the US, that we get things from there. Mm. So even though it was released in Italy and blah, blah, other places in Europe, we in Sweden had to wait for the whole distribution thing to go through. And when it did, they just decided, no, we're not going to show it in Sweden. So I had to go over to Copenhagen to actually watch it in the cinema myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because I never went to the screening for the crew and I wasn't around.
Yeah, I remember that. I spoke to director Bong straight after I watched that film, and he said, "What do you think?" And I really, really liked it, but I was so bowled over with it. I kind of went, "Yeah, it's good." I wasn't half as enthusiastic as I would have liked to have been, but. Because it really threw me watching it. It was tonally very, very different to... I should have known from his other films, but like it's just tonally different to how I expected it to be. But cool. And, you know, it's a film. I feel I look pretty stupid in it, but...
that's a good word. Those helmets...
to get the exact specific word.
Yeah, those helmets didn't do us any favors.
That was it. Yeah, that was exactly it. I remember being in the costume and, you know, being... geared up with bulletproof vest and combat stuff, and then being given an M16 or whatever it was.
No, it was feeling an M4.
Okay, M4, there we go. Yeah. Okay, M4. So, and then, feeling like a real mean mofo. And then they gave me the helmet, and it just felt like it was like sort of just as you go outside, and your mother grabbing you and going, "Go, don't forget your hat and scarf."
That's exactly what it was.
Felt like that.
Yes.
So just
exactly what it was.
But you can see why they did it. It makes sense.
Of course. But you got to take yours off.
I got to take mine off. Scene. And that scene is in my showreel as well. That's the only bit I strapped
to. Yeah. When we're just mumbling about things.
Very fun film.
Yeah. I wasn't completely 100% pleased when I saw material from the film because they dubbed me. So.
Oh, yeah, they did, didn't they? It's quite close to you, though.
No, it's not. They changed it to an American accent, and I did an English one in the when we did it.
And that guy
has got a lot more this kind of voice, you know.
Okay, I redubbed myself doing an American accent on. I was in Das Boot. They're remaking that. They're actually on their second season already. First season's out. It's very good. Check it out.
Right.
But I got a moment. I think right at the top of the season where I'm gazing down upon. Bodies of German submariners who we've just blown up, and I'm playing an American Navy Marine or something. And I did a bit of American, but they got me back in to redub myself. But I was lucky there.
Yeah, but was that a sound issue or was it an accent issue?
It was an accent issue. They were like, you're not American enough. So, but I got another chance at it, which is very generous of them.
We'll see. And did you have a dialogue coach on site when you did the ADR?
No, because it was a German project. It's like everything else in that show is in German.
So okay.
But
you still, you could hear yourself like, oh yeah, I hear what you mean. I'm going to add this and take it up a notch.
We did something different. We did. I just went at it in a different angle. Mm. I mean, it's tricky with ADR because you've got to match up the original rhythm that you said it in just to sync it up with the lips. Kind of constrained there. But
Unless you're saying something different, which has happened to me a couple of times, and because they're going to like cut away from your face and then it's going to just keep trailing into.
Did you ever do, I think it's, they kind of came and then they went, they happen now, but it's like loop groups. Have you ever done that? It's like to generate background noise.
Oh, like Walla
and stuff that.
No. I know you've done.
I've done a lot of that. It's really fun. It's fun because it's kind of, you know, it doesn't really matter what you say. You're just providing some low level stuff, which they'll mix. It's for the sound mix, you know. So you're not dubbing the actors. You're dubbing the extras.
But I suppose it would be like sometimes something should be shouted from off screen, like,
"Yeah,
look at that! What's that? Is it a bird? Is it a plane?"
Exactly. Yeah, Yeah, sometimes there'll be loads like that, but mostly just kind of, you know, marketplace noises. We did, I did it for...
Rhubarb, peas and carrots, rhubarb.
yeah, but then you end up, because you're there all day and there's like, well, the way I've done it, with this big, really old school, really lovely big soundstage in Barrandov, and there's six of you in there. So mm-hmm. you kind of, and there's six actors locked up mm-hmm. in a dark room for the day. So everybody goes a little bit crazy and it gets quite funny after a while. I did it on Borgia.
Borgia.
Which is all medieval. So we were doing, it was mostly like, you know, markets and stuff. Mm. But it just, we had a note, we got silly with the stuff we're chatting, like fish for sale and whatever in the background. We had a note from the production the next time we went in, which was like market, it said, they list all the stuff you've got and it's like market sounds, brackets, no Monty Python. Which I was really, really proud of. I was really, because we
throwing out your day.
Yeah, we've been throwing in stupid shit like that in the background. Because again, it doesn't, you know.
Because it probably happened before. People were like, burn the witch. Like, yeah. And bring out your day.
Yeah. And once you get on the tip of doing that with a show like that, then it's, you know, it's difficult to stop.
Right. Oh, yeah, Borgia.
But, you know, if anybody, you know, I can also do serious stuff, so. Still, hire me, you know, anybody.
Of course. You're a proper, serious, dramatic actor.
Serious, yeah, take me seriously. Yeah.
I'm a Borgia, yeah. If you're listening to this show and want to piece things together, back in an episode I did with actress and model Linnea Peel, we were talking about the worst auditions we ever did.
Oh, yeah.
And, mine was Borgia, actually.
Oh, really?
It was for Borgia.
Yeah. Okay.
So I did not get that one.
What did you do something in particular, or did you just, it didn't come down? Or did
your trousers fall down? There was an issue of, I needed to do an action. I needed to sew something.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know, they didn't say it in the script. So I was like, well, sit here and sew on this sweater. And like, shit, okay, now I got to do something with my hands. I didn't really think that I was going to do. And that kind of messed me up. And there was several other things that I shouldn't really go into. Why I just didn't. And and sometimes you think things were going to go well, because I went in there like I usually do, like, I got this.
Right.
I know those lines. And one of those days when things just go, what?
I caught you with the sewing. I was talking to the students. I remember the other day I went in for a casting for a commercial, but it was like the action was you had to be a chef. So they just wanted a bit of video of you chopping up food. They had a cutting board and a big knife there and some fruit and stuff.
It was with a
casting director I get along with quite well, and it wasn't high stakes or anything, but as soon as the camera rolled, he was like, okay, you're a chef, you're super cool, you know what's going on. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Chup, chup, chup. Ah, fuck. And I immediately cut my finger, but I pushed on through without, because I don't think I managed. Probably you can see it when you rewatch the film, but he didn't notice it as it happened.
Didn't you like see blood starting to form on the knife and vegetables and stuff?
Yeah, we had to talk about it afterwards. But
is it so gruesome that people can't really?
It was an idiot move.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's interesting when you watch the. All your credits, because there's a lot of them. I mean, it's like 50 something, whatever, if you go through it all. I think you are one of two people I share most credits with on IMDb, actually.
Everybody?
Yeah. It's just three. It's Snowpiercer, it's Crossing Lines, and it's one short film where you were the lead, and I did some small thing on it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, back in 2012. What was the short film? Probably.
Was it a film school one? Or?
Yeah. The one's called... The Pursuit of Happiness. So we worked together in construction in that one.
Right. Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah. Mm, yeah,
yeah. It was just a small thing. So.
Yeah.
But it's a credit.
Okay, it's a credit. Yeah, right.
Yeah. And I think that's interesting. But when you are in a town like Prague, which is kind of unique, together with probably Budapest or something, that you have a lot of expat-type actors and... The good thing about that is there's not a lot of you, so fewer people will fight over the same parts, even though the parts may be smaller in the actual thing. But that also means like you're going to be credited with your actor friends in town a lot of times.
Yeah. No, it's great. Obviously, yeah, they do come with the smaller parts, but they look in Prague. You know, there's so many actors here that they'll take the time to check. I don't know if that happens so much in Budapest, or certainly not in Bucharest. Prague's just weird in its heritage of, you know, since the 90s, it's been a kind of, well, it's Bohemian, obviously, but it's been a kind of draw for Bohemians, and especially Americans. They were, you know, it's like the new left bank. Mm-hmm. So all those artists who came here and, you know, trying to write the next great American novel and acting in their spare time kind of built up that basis of it. So it's quite an unusual town in that there's not that many actors, but there are still, you know, it does still have a solid base of them.
Oh, yeah.
Which
absolutely.
I'm not sure other towns in Europe do outside of London.
Oh, okay. No, I think you know a lot more about it than I have. Have you had any reason to go to Budapest to do a job or something?
Yeah, I shot a couple of commercials down there.
Okay. But they cast them here and blah, blah.
Yeah, that was unusual. They don't, I mean, I don't know, I'm sure they do castings down there. I'm in contact with a couple of the casting directors. So there are people there, but I just don't think, and I know some people from here have been in some films, like they shot, what's that, Mars film with Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah. The Martian.
Escape. Yeah, right. I was going to say Escape from Mars.
it could have been called that, but yeah, it wasn't.
That shot down there, and there was a few actors from here. It's very, Budapest is very, very busy, and it's huge studios as well.
Exactly. When it comes to Ridley things, that's where he goes.
Yeah, right.
So it's like Blade Runner 2049. Now Dune is shooting there. And, And
who's directing Dune? Is it Ridley Scott?
No. That's Denis Villeneuve.
Right. Yeah. And it's produced by
those
Ridley
two.
Scott.
Yeah, I think he's sometimes been involved in things.
Maybe.
And of course, you know, you try to. I have like to try to contact people who cast things down there and just be like, hey, I'm up here in Sweden. I'm ready to jump on a plane, basically. You know,
I'm over here.
Yeah, that's basically it. But, and of course, it's a super long shot, but sometimes it might be worthwhile show up, you know.
Yeah.
How do you do when it comes to that? I mean, of course, you got an agent here.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have one in London?
Yeah.
All right. So you're pretty covered already when it comes to that. But do you do a lot of work yourself, like sending stuff out and just presenting yourself?
Not as much as I should. I'm pretty terrible.
Well,
at that.
Or should you? That's the big
question.
I don't know.
I think it's pretty quickly. I mean, yes, you should, but I think it's pretty quickly law of diminishing returns. So, you know, like really working on your website, it's not going to make that much difference. I haven't got a website, but like, you know, really kind of getting into that, it's not going to make that much difference. But then,
maybe not.
But then, you know, it's so funny
nice
the way
have.
You just. These things work, and you know, you just flash up before the right person at the right time, and then that's it. So, yeah. I'm lazy about it, but I wouldn't advise people not to advise them to put themselves out there, you know, like, but I don't really.
You have to be a little bit careful as well? Because I know some casting directors feel like, no, I contact you, not the other way around. So I don't think you will be put on some blacklist, but you may be, if you are persistent, you may be like an annoyance in their mind after a while, you know.
Yeah, there's definitely again, actors who operate like that. And I think casting directors are very, very aware of it. And, you know,
yes, you must get so many things, you know, sent to them all the time.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So, yeah, you don't want to hassle people, and it's that thing of like putting, I just have to look after myself. I don't, it's up to other people what they do, but of putting that ahead of the work. You know, it's more important that you work, you got to get yourself out. More important you work on your acting and you do stuff like that, and I don't know, sometimes people who are like, who are pushy with that actually aren't doing that. And also it's got, you know, that comes as well from a love of what you do, so.
No, absolutely. No, be good, do things. That's, you know, two big things you should focus on, of course.
Solid advice, yeah.
And then just try to not lose track of the whole marketing thing as well. You know?
But I mean, who am I to advise? I've been very lucky here in Prague. It's been very good to me. So, you know, it's you got to get yourself out there because, you know, things do just happen with the right person seeing you. But then you got to be ready.
Yeah.
If they do call you. So.
Well, speaking of Prague, I mean, this is might bore the listeners who listen to all the episodes or whatever, but how did you end up in Prague?
How did I end up? It's not particularly glamorous. I had a friend, I was working in London and kind of done with it, and I had a friend out, well, actually in Brno, which is a city on the other end of the country, and I came out for a bit to help in teaching, and so I started teaching out here, and then I got...
English, then.
Yeah, English is foreign language, kind of, you know, great job to be able to do just straight off the bat, really, without... I've taught before. My dad's a teacher, so I'd kind of had a bit of a way into that. But, did that for a while and then fell in with theatre groups thing, and that's when my life started to go wrong. Just kind of got more stuff of that and started going for... It was very nice. It's like... It was nice... Insofar as it was always, it's still kind of, I try and treat things like this, but it was always, there was always progress. But then, like, I was very happy to be doing very, very small parts and just kind of be involved in something and you know, incrementally making my way up. You can't control what jobs you do and don't get, but try and sort of think in terms of like, of everything being a kind of a first. So it's like, this is the first time. I've done a supporting role, or this is the first time I've been in a sci-fi, or like,
right, yeah,
you know, and all this, like, the first time I've done something for the second time.
Keeping a bright outlook.
Yeah, but I've been lucky in so far, and you know, there were all these, like, because there's all these bohemian characters out here. I met some very interesting fish. It's Prague's joyous like that, you know, and then getting into commercials again, which was a kind of a soft entry into the film stuff. I got it's a soft entry into getting into casting because it's quite simple. So it's a good way to learn that, and because it's so simple, you just have to learn the technique of it rather than, you know, any acting. It's quite distinct. It's quite clear to learn that, and then similarly, getting on commercials, like often, especially ones to shoot here. They're huge, high budget. So, you know, if you work it out per second of footage, they're often, I would think, higher than a lot of movies because you're just trying to make a 30-second commercial and they'll spend a couple of days on it.
Sure,
like a high-end movie will be shooting about that, 30 seconds or a minute, 2 minutes a day.
And we will get more money from them as well.
Oh, yeah, there's that as well, But it was great to get in that environment, to get used to... just being on a film set, you know, and booms and cranes swinging around you and people putting makeup on you. Just getting used to that. Again, almost with zero sort of like, I don't say zero acting, it's not true at all, but, you know, even if it's a commercial where they're trying to get some good acting, it's only 30 seconds. So, you know, there's not going to be that much.
Depends on what it is, I suppose, you know.
There's a few that have been like dramatic, but they're generally not. I don't talk down commercials, but
no. And the strangest
but it
one
was a good intro. So
the strangest one you've ever did, it was the one with a penguin, or has it been even stranger?
Maybe
ones?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that was fun because it had the penguin. So I was happy to work with the penguin and tick that off. That's definitely a first. You know, it's like okay, first time. I did one. One that springs to mind is a Russian commercial for, it was an internet service provider, I think, called Buzz, or however you say Buzz in Russian. And I was reading on the top of a rooftop. They shot this in a soundstage, and then a pterodactyl swoops down and picks me up. I don't quite sure. Okay. I can't remember what the thing was. So that had a lot of wire work. It's like they had to shoot me getting pulled up.
Yeah.
Then they had to shoot me getting dragged along. And then they shot me getting dropped into the nest of baby pterodactyls.
Oh, right.
Who presumably I was the food. So they were going to eat me. But because I had my iPad and this service provider, I could entertain them by watching movies. So the last shot is us all watching movies together.
It's always a strange, yeah, such strange ideas.
Yeah. I know, yeah. I don't know how they pitched that one. But that was fun. But I spent the whole day getting zipped up and zipped along and zipped down in this harness. I had
and that sounds fun.
It was fun. it was funny though. At the end, I laughed at myself because it was a long day, and it was like I was up and down. And those harnesses are pretty uncomfortable after you've done it a few times. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of it, they wanted to do some stills promo, some photos, but that meant the shooting had wrapped. So they wrapped everybody, and I was like, oh my god. It's a weird thing of like, you know, we work so hard to get on a film set, and then as soon as you're on a film set, you're like, when are we finishing? But everybody wrapped, and I'd been dragged up and down all day. And then the stills photographer came in bright and bushy-tailed and was like, okay, let's do some more. I was like, oh, Christ. And they put me up on the wires, two wires either side of me, and he wanted me to kind of stay horizontal so it looked like I was falling and he was going to get some shots like that. But it's very difficult to do. So I kept kind of rotating upside down whilst trying to pose for this thing. And he was like, and I was losing it a bit because I'd been doing this all day. And he was like, you know, you've got to stay still. So I just can't fucking stay still. I was going around, upside down. And, but you don't have much gravitas when you're hanging upside down.
No, or gravity.
It's true, actually. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
There's a lesson in not trying to hold on to your dignity, I think.
But yeah, it's hard to do on commercials. It really is.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I managed to do that pretty much because almost all of the commercials I've done, should I say all of them? Because they are not many. I've either been cut out completely or just been reduced so I'm just seen quickly in the background or something like that, still got paid
for the boom.
So that's kind of like getting everything in a way, because you might not want to be exposed in commercials necessarily anyway. So
I mean, again, that thing of shooting stuff out here, and because it's so internationally distributed, I don't really worry about that so much. I've no shame of the commercials. So I'm proud of them all.
I did one Russian one as well. It was strange because it was a Russian one, but it was going to be shown in... No, okay. The people in it were supposed to be Germans because they were engineers and things. And it just, no, that's good. The engineers are Germans, you know, that classically.
Fits.
Yeah. But they were going to dub over them with Russian.
Oh, right, okay.
But a little bit. You were supposed to hear a bit of the German underneath. Yeah. So right, it was so just that Russian thing of just speaking over somebody.
Right.
This is what they're saying.
Right.
And it was a solid
Russian accent just then, by the way, Peter.
You could tell exactly what I was going for. And it was going to be shown in Russia, and it was going to be shown in parts of East Asia, I think. And
right.
Blah, blah, blah. So of course I'm going to do this. And that was one of them. I'm just shown in like a couple of seconds in the background.
Sure.
And hey, that was good. But we were paid in American dollars in cash in an envelope. Everybody, including the filmmakers, the director, everybody. It sounds legit, yeah. But the production company were like, well... We've been working with Russians quite a bit, and this is just how they do it. So
everything on the black
market. So I was just having this envelope full of greens in my my drawer for that whole summer. Okay, I got to go exchange some $100 bales.
Some greenbacks,
kind of weird. And and I think the filmmakers, they actually had to go with their whole lot of cash to the bank and be like, I want to have this in Swedish. And they're like, we have to talk to the manager of the branch of the bank because this is not how we do things. It's too much money, too many questions.
Yeah, sure.
Things got to be answered.
In Russia, commercial pay you. Well, they all do that. But yeah.
Hey, you even tried. You did a Russian.
I did a Russian. I've done a Russian accent on stage a few times, but it's kind of...
Yeah, it's kind of special to do a Russian accent, yes.
Yeah,
I did. I've done Polish for real, and I've done Polish in auditions, and just got to realize it's not Russian. It's not fully that that hard on the consonants and the things, but it's still.
I tell you what, I don't know anybody who can do a Czech accent who's not Czech, obviously.
That's interesting.
I've never met an actor
really
out here who can actually. I met a couple of you who are.
It is an interesting accent, really. I just today went to this typical touristy thing and went to the National Library and Astronomical Tower, and you know, we had a Czech guide who spoke English, and that was, this is a really interesting type of dialect. Like, she didn't say astronomer, she said astronomer.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
well, I can barely make out what you're trying to say, but yeah, because all this emphasis are on the wrong syllables all the time.
That's the difficult thing. Yeah, I've been here because I did some actually not far from here. I'm in there's Warhorse Studios, who produced a game called Kingdom Come.
Oh, yeah.
They made Mafia as well, with the same guy who's in charge of it made Mafia before that. But so I did a bit of stuff in that, and more medieval things, and I could play different characters, but there was some Latin in that. And it was funny being in the studio trying to do the Latin. There was some Latin in Nightfall as well, but the same thing. Like, the Czechs could just read it straight off, because the Czechs phonetic, you know, it's like you read it.
You read it. Yeah.
You just and that's true of Latin as well.
You just got to know what all the little things mean on the, on the S's and the R's and the I's. And,
But if you know what they mean, they always sound the same.
Oh, yeah.
Unlike English, which, you know, anything can sound like anything. So, when you're reading Latin, you need to read it phonetically. So, like, if there's something like a word ends in T-I-O-N, I naturally want to read it as shun. Which obviously is not there, whereas they'll read Tion, which is how you should say it. But so, point being, the Czechs could get through it much, much quicker, and were astonished and disappointed by my ineptitude in it.
But how did you guys deal with that, and how did you deal with that yourself?
It just took longer. Just had to keep going through it.
But I mean, it's a kind of a dead language in a way. Nobody speaks it really today. So, what kind of accent did you put on it? And
does that? I did Italian. something like that. No, I don't know. The whole sort of like the accents for Kingdom Come were all British. So it was just a kind of British Latin person. But yeah, I don't know. You can't.
So you didn't have any dialect or dialogue coach on set, but were like, this is the Latin kind of sound we want. So train yourself to do this. And
actually, that did happen on Nightfall.
Okay,
yeah,
it did.
We had a few prayers, and that they were very specific. There was somebody dedicated to that. But it wasn't, again, it wasn't accent.
Was that
it
a Latin expert? It was
pronunciation.
To...
Yeah. Okay. But it's pronunciation, not so much accent. And again, everybody's got an English accent in Nightfall, even though everybody's French. So,
yeah.
But that's the great, wonderful convention, which I'm very happy for, that all history is in British. So
It seems like it.
There's something. There's definitely something jarring. It's just convention. There's no reason why it should be, but it's just something jarring about having an American accent in something medieval.
Yeah, but that's really strange. I mean, that thing, you're used to it. Everybody around the world is used to it, because as Americans and Brits do period pieces, and then they're going to speak with their own voices, even though it's, you know, in Greece and, you know, Alexander the Great, whatever.
Well, that was Irish accents, wasn't it?
Because even Irish.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Irish so and so. But
the Macedonians had that Irish accent. It's a fit Colin Farrell, yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
But I spoke to somebody just yesterday, I think, about this, that as soon as I had to experience that myself, for instance, the girl with the dragon tattoo, Fincher's version, you know, it takes place in Sweden and everybody's speaking British English.
Yeah, right.
And then there are some Swedes who kind of have a Swedish accent, and then they do strange things. Like, I think the main character, who's played by Daniel Craig, he's supposed to be a Swede.
Right.
He asks some old man, like, no, the old man asks him, like, because his name is Blomqvist, and so he asks him, is it Blomqvist or Blomqvist? Oh, and it's Blom. Okay, yeah, good. But we don't say that, so it's just, what was that?
Sure, yeah.
Why did you even put that in?
Yeah. I like that film a lot. I thought it was very good.
Yeah, it was very well made. It's Fincher. Yeah. What do you expect? Yeah, you know, but
sure. I've been watching a lot, or reading a bit about his Aliens 3 adventure.
Oh yeah,
Yeah, that was a real tragedy.
Documentary is about that.
Yeah.
It feels like he just wanted to quit as soon as he started, basically, because that was his first feature.
It was his first feature, yeah. Yeah, it's a real shame. It could have, I mean, I recently read as well, have you read the William Gibson version of there's an Alien 3 screenplay by William Gibson.
Really? No, yeah. I haven't.
It's quite interesting. I don't know if it was, well, it might have been better. It's kind of like, it's got quite a Cold War film feel to it. It's like there's a sort of Russian section and there's a...
So it takes place on Earth?
No. It takes place in out in space. That's the thing that I'd love to see them do, is there's a whole comic book series, the Dark Horse thing, called about the Earth Wars.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's,
yeah,
I don't know. I haven't read like, that. Yeah, they're cool. Mm-hmm. They're really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're really interesting and they really go into the mythos of it. So, right.
Okay.
Yeah, if they made something. But, I mean, you know, they're going to make another, that Prometheus, whatever the next one's going to be called, I think Ridley Scott's going to do another one.
Probably. I wouldn't hold that against him. No, I haven't heard anything about any title.
No.
So it was Prometheus and it was...
the other one. Yeah, what's it called?
Covenant.
Covenant, yeah. So yeah.
Probably going to be something along that line of...
Yeah, something
fancy.
One big portentous word.
Yeah,
yeah.
And Alien 3, that was really interesting. Yeah, I mean, you've heard of all that stuff that was supposed to be, but didn't really turn out to be. That it was going to be like a wooden planet with monks.
Yeah, right.
At one point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was a very early idea that got. Yeah,
and that's like I kind of want to see that actually.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Yeah. Problem with that film is everybody looks the same is a real major problem because everybody's skinhead and kind of that's really I mean there's lots of problems with that film but
I still like it
for the most part
I do like it. It's not the best one but I like it better than the fourth one
for sure,
which is good bits as well but
yeah for sure yeah it was the same. The fourth one was the guy who directed Amelie.
Yeah.
I've worked with him. I worked with him on a commercial.
Oh, really?
I say worked with him. I was like a featured extra. I was a cop chasing somebody.
Jean Genet?
No, that's a playwright. But I think it is Jean something.
Yeah.
Jean Genet is a playwright.
And it's Jean-Pierre Genet. Yeah.
Oh, right. Jean-Pierre Genet. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, right. But what was that commercial?
I don't even know.
Oh, right.
Can't remember. I was dressed up as a New York cop. We shot it at Vinohradsky Divadlo. Theatre and I don't know. I just had to run after somebody.
I
don't ask questions.
I mean, that man does brilliant things. I mean, I love the Delicatessen and the City of Lost Children things. And just Alien 4 just worked at 50% to me, for me, actually. It was maybe not the best match.
No, it's a weird choice of director, I think.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, but that's the thing about the Aliens films. They've all kind of, like, Ridley Scott was an outsider for that. It's not his first feature, but
no, his second. He did The Duelists before,
right,
and so that is kind of strange.
Yeah.
To just give him a big sci-fi thing.
James Cameron as well was not.
More sense because he
makes
had
sense.
Done.
So it's a great fit
because he had done Terminator and.
Oh, he'd done Terminator. Yeah. Okay. So okay.
Made a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he really took it to a good place. So, I mean, those two together is, almost a holy pairing. You
know? Yeah, really, yeah.
Even though they're different.
Yeah, yeah. So Ridley Scott, I think, started as a set designer. Or he started working in that, which I think is interesting because that kind of...
Yeah.
I mean, because obviously, like, the set design with the Geiger stuff, but also the other design... I think you're right.
Because he knows how to draw. He draws a lot of the storyboards and stuff.
Really, right?
Yeah, and he had done a lot of commercials before as well.
Yeah, sure. And, I can remember one of his commercials for, like, just stuck in my head from growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It's famous for Hovis bread, which actually uses the Smetana tune Voltava.
Okay.
So all links, sort of somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm glad we've started talking about Aliens. I really do like Aliens. I think it's the best film.
Well, that's the kind
and
of film.
I will
films...
fight anyone who disagrees.
Exactly. Yeah, me too. Let's throw down. No, but those are the kind of films I really want to do. The ones who become iconic and they're fantastical and they're really, well made and you know, carry that legacy, you can say, well, I was that person in that one, you know.
Well, I felt actually being in Snowpiercer is probably the closest.
I was just going to get there. Right. Exactly. When we were shooting, and this is something I don't think you know because I didn't say it then, I was waiting for, you know, between takes and stuff, I had listening to music and I was listening to the Aliens soundtrack.
Really?
Just to get that feeling. Like, this is the closest I might get, but let's, you know.
Were you kind of prepping your character a bit?
Both.
Yeah. Interesting.
Just feeling
that's
it.
That's good.
You know?
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I never do stuff with music, but I've seen a lot of actors doing it on set, you know, just taking a moment to put their headphones on and stuff. And it makes it, because music affects me very strongly.
Oh, of course it does. Yeah,
very emotive for me. So, yeah, I should start doing that.
Yeah, finding something that's suitable for that world.
Yeah, totally. It makes,
going with it.
Yeah, just put you in that state. Yeah,
you just got to have some kind of player on you that they actually allow on set. Because sometimes I suppose they like, no, you're not going to bring your phone in here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's like a lot of the stuff is like getting to that level where you can actually do that stuff. Not, I mean, listening to music is one thing, but getting to a level where you're given enough freedom to, you're given enough to play with, and you've got the freedom to kind of to play with it, as opposed to, it's still true, but because I've done so many day player parts here, and you come in and the goal is to say your line and not knock over the furniture. Which
Bare
is
minimum.
Fine. Which, yeah, no, that's fine. You should like. I kind of got good at being good. It's like well behaved, which is okay. That's good. It's a good skill. And like, you know, 50% of acting is getting along with people anyway. 50, you know, of working on a film set. I think so. I think a lot of people come a cropper like that, but
or stay out of people's way.
Well, just having being there to work and understanding what everybody else is doing. But getting out of people's way. And because of that, like I had to check myself to make sure I didn't take that into other castings and other things I did, where you want to just be a bit freer and play a bit more and try stuff out. Mm-hmm. Not waste time, but, you know, that's a bit of a shift. Because, you know, like, you've got to be offering something, you know. You've got to, and you can't be doing that if you're kind of head down, worried that you're going to disturb the production by doing anything.
For sure, but that's a balance.
It is balance,
because you don't want to be the person who's like, "Who the fuck is this guy now?"
Yeah, you don't want
to. Did he just talk to Julia Roberts?
Yeah. Shut the fuck up and get me some sushi.
Get him out of here.
You don't want to be that guy. No. I mean, not until you're a big superstar anyway. Just let it all go and just be a complete prick. but of course,
you have plans already.
Exactly. Yeah, I've worked it out. I know when I can start doing it. No, but actually having said that, that's not true at all as well, actually, because you can't. You always have to... for your own sanity and pleasure, you have to kind of stay working with everybody because you've got to be enjoying it, you know.
Oh yeah,
that was an interesting thing that came up for me recently, which I've really been thinking about a lot lately. Was we were chatting? I was chatting with somebody, and it was like, can you name an actor who doesn't look like they're having fun? An actor you like who doesn't look like? And it was a real kind of, it was a bit of a revelation to me, and it kind of ties in with this thing about being good. It's like, there's no actors who I look at and go, oh yeah, they're taking this very seriously and they've worked very hard and it's diligently. Mm. Everybody who I like is on some level enjoying it. That's radiating through at some, even if they're playing victims or, you know, depressed characters, I guess. There's still sort of like...
Well, yeah.
There's a sort of a joy to it. Which is interesting, I think, and it kind of, I don't know. Maybe you can name some. Maybe Sweden's full of like depressive.
Maybe there's a few. I think when I see performances done, I can sometimes feel like, no, they're not really enjoying this.
Yeah.
But I can say without naming any names or productions that I have seen things behind the scenes where you get the idea that this person just would rather be on a better thing or something, and you can tell from even they might say something outright, like
yeah,
it makes you feel like this person just don't give a fuck anymore.
Yeah,
just want to end the day and then end the week and then end the
right
the shoot. You know.
Yeah, and I would suggest that if you are in, that's going to show. That's going to come out in your performance,
yeah,
no matter how good you are and how much you've got it.
Yeah, it's not going to be the best end result at all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it goes back to all that stuff like, you know, how much work is done for you. It's that divide between doing casting and doing the actual film set.
Mm-hmm.
In the casting, you've got nothing. It's just you and it's focused on you. But you realize when you're on set that how much work the story is doing for you, how much the set is doing for you, your costume. So you're kind of, I don't know, you know, you're kind of there just to bring the energy almost.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't mean like you should do everything with a massive grin on your face or like deliver all your lines laughing. Yeah. But maybe it would work for some things. But yeah, I think you've got to enjoy it.
Mm,
for your own sanity at least.
Yeah.
But I think that's where the better performances come from.
Well, absolutely, yeah. Well, talk about Blood, Love, and Rhetoric.
Hmm. Yeah, that's my theatre company that I co-founded with Logan Hillier, who's an awesome directorial force and a formidable actor as well.
Oh, yes, yeah. I've seen him work, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And we've been doing that for, we're going up to 10 years now. We started off doing kind of dark European 20th century plays. We kind of wanted to get away from the British sort of oeuvre of things, and the American one as well. And there's so many plays that are popular on the continent that don't really play in the UK. So, so we're kind of doing dark comedy horrors. But now we've done over 50 plays, I guess.
Mm.
But you know, way more performances on top of that. Now we've done lots of our own stuff. We've written things. I wrote a couple of things. I did a play based on the works of Jorge Luis Borges, or The Enemies, and we did some other stuff like based on authors and things. Produced our own things. We run an improv group now, which is shit hot. We've got great, really funny people.
Mm, yeah.
A few of whom, I guess you know, Dan Brown's in it.
Oh, yeah.
And the awesome, I can't not mention him, the incredible Mark Cram, who's just a joy in every way. well, not every way.
Thing about him I really...
Yeah, I just remember the time. He's like, owes me 500 grand. So. But like, so we've got a very funny group, and at the moment we're doing original Lovecraft plays, which Logan wrote.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Haven't
you done that before, though?
We did the original one, Devil's Reef, very long ago, like maybe 8 years ago. I mean, he'd done it before that as well.
Mm.
So it's been through a lot of evolutions, but now we're doing it again. It's a sort of bigger production, and then it's a trilogy at the moment, but there's going to be a fourth one.
So it'll
be
a
quad, whatever it is, and then
quadrilogy.
Quadrilogy, yeah, sure. And then there'll be a fifth one, and that will create a pentagram of comedy horror. It's a comedy horror musical, which is, I think, the right genre. Comedy horror is kind of the genre that we've sort of gravitated towards.
Yeah.
I think it's the right flavor for our times.
Yeah, the only thing I've seen you guys do, I think, is the Wojciech thing you did at the park.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that at the park?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I'm really pleased. I directed that. That was Mark Cram, who was Wojciech, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was just a great role for him.
Mm.
I'm really glad you saw that. Because we redid that again in the theatre, and we did it in a few other venues, and it was okay. Good.
Yeah.
But it never had the magic again.
No, it was really cozy to be in the park doing and see that. Willow Tree. It was the summer of 2012, I think.
Yeah. Sounds right. Yeah, that was. Yeah, I've a lot of affection for that play as well, and Mark did it brilliantly, and Beata Linda, who played Marie, I think his name, it was wonderful as well. We had great performers in there.
Mm.
Some great musicians as well. But yeah, Wojciech's such a sad... Mark played it so beautifully, but he's such a... He's such a tragic figure. And the play is famous in one way for being the first tragedy that dealt with a kind of lowly person. It wasn't a king or a queen being knocked down from on high. Really? It was just this base level soldier.
But when was it written?
Put me on the spot, like 1870 something.
Okay, yeah.
And it was found posthumously, and it's kind of the order of it you can rearrange. It was because Tom Waits had done a version of it as well, and then there was the Tiger Lilies as well had done a version of it, and Nick Cave's got a version of it as well. So it's been musical. I haven't seen or heard that, but I don't. Yeah, I should check that one out. Actually, I don't. It must be an album to it, but Blood Money is the Tom Waits album from Wojciech. So that was kind of originally.
And we quoted that in the God's Away on Business.
The ship is sinking. God's Away on Business. Yeah. God's Away on Business. Yeah,
really good.
Sung by the Cookie Monster. So we were going to do that, but then we had Eddie Allen, who's CCTV All-Stars, had this had some great tunes. I went over to his house once and asked if he wanted to do that, but he had a whole bunch of tunes already, and they kind of, we managed to slot them in and fit them there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a good production. That was fun.
Yeah, really nice. So what are you guys, so you're going to do this Lovecraft thing?
So we'll do that for another season. We're going to be bringing back a few, do a few smaller productions as well. Logan's going to be putting up his Pessoa play as well, Frederico Pessoa, which is called Disquiet. So that's coming up in August. That's kind of different tone.
What venue is that?
That's going to be in Dvadlo 21, which is where we're at the moment, D21 in Villaradi. We're there for a little bit longer. And then we've got comedy going on the other side of town. I'm kind of more... in the improv comedy, sort of managing that at the moment. And I hope we're going to start a few things with that. We've got a sketch show coming up. We had a great Jessica Mitolo come over from Second City.
Really?
We had a really good workshop with her that kind of was very about writing sketches. Mm-hmm. But it was like...
Second City in Chicago or...
Yeah. But it was really practical. Mm-hmm. It wasn't any sort of... I've done lots of writing workshops and things and read lots about, but it wasn't any airy-fairy stuff about where you get inspiration from or anything like that. It was about the practical...
It's a yes-ending practical things,
Yeah, it was like... Because we improvise and we come up with some funny stuff. Mm. Like, the laughs we get, I don't know, like 50% of it is the magic of improv, just having it there spontaneously happen. So if you repeat them in a sketch, it's been rehearsed, they wouldn't necessarily be funny. Mm. But then like there's a few, like 30% or something, I don't know what happens to the other 20%, but 30% is like is genuinely funny stuff that we come up with. So it's trying to work that into sketches and how we do that. But she gave us a very practical method of generating ideas, testing it on stage, coming back, revamping it, and just structural. And it's like, it was applying the same similar rules as you do for improv, like yes and. A really useful one was just in general was like, and yes anding your partner when you're writing stuff, which is incredibly useful. I've got a friend who occasionally, we're kind of working on a screenplay, it's a bit sort of like, it's something that comes and goes, and I don't know if we'll ever really finish it, but the point is after that workshop, I started yes-anding him when we were writing stuff. And it was just me saying, yeah, okay, like that. Let's go with that idea and let's see what we can add to it.
What's happening next.
And it's so useful because, sometimes it's difficult writing stuff because you're putting your critical eye in and somebody suggests something and you immediately, it doesn't feel right. Mm. But just ignoring that little meh and going in and saying, yeah, okay. You might not end up sticking with that idea, but more comes out of it. And it fleshes out what they've been, where the idea came from for them well. You get a feel of what, you get a better understanding of why they were suggesting it in the first place, and it suggests more things. So it's very, I mean, you've got to make a decision what you do and don't do eventually, but it's super, super useful for generating stuff like that. And also, like, the other thing was, which I was using with the acting students the other day, was just like, when you watch something or somebody generates, like, the question you ask is, what did I like about that? Which is, I mean, just, it's good for turning off that critical, you know, censorious part of your brain, which is just deadly for actors. And, you know, they
don't focus on what you didn't like, just focus on what you
did. Just say,
like,
what did you like? Yeah. And that's just useful across the board for, you know, and then you keep the stuff you like.
Because,
you know, sometimes you see something and there's a bit of it you don't like, and that niggles with it and it just colours the whole, and you miss out all the other stuff. So anyway, so from that we've started generating sketches, so we're going to do a sketch show, which I'm excited about. We've got some funny people, and hopefully we can come up with some funny stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Mild ambitions.
Well, it's good to have. You know, at least you get somewhere. Maybe not all the way where you thought you were going to be, but still.
Hopefully, I mean, we'll put some of it down and, you know, and record it or film it somehow.
If we get
some good stuff, and then we can kind of put that out. Because, well, about doing improv, it all happens in the moment. It doesn't really, like, we've got a great group, like, we're funny. Come and check us out. It would be amazing, Chayovna. But improv doesn't really bear up from being filmed, because just by the act of filming it, you are kind of editing it. And the moment you edited it, just because you've chosen to show that's like a very basic edit. Because you've done that, it loses that spontaneity immediately.
It does true,
work to the extent, but as long as people know, you've got to sort of establish the context you're watching it. Although we're getting better at filming it. We've had a few people who've helped us out. But yeah. So the point being, just with the sketch show, we'll try and get some stuff out there.
Let's jump back a little bit. You touched upon, you haven't gone to any drama school or anything like that.
So you
got into acting, but by actually moving here and then falling into it, like you said.
I've got GCSE drama. I think I've got a B in GCSE drama.
What does that mean, though?
The level you do up until, it's called something else now, Key Stage 3, I guess. Till you're 16.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you do like 10.
Yeah, so you weren't totally green when it comes to...
I'm kind of joking. That's not very much, really.
But still,
I'd acted in school plays, and I did a little bit at university. I did a bit of stand-up at university as well. So
did
I had that
you?
About, yeah.
Ah, right. Yeah. And why did you stop?
Because I was just lazy and kind of didn't... I didn't realize how... I wish I had pursued a bit more, because I didn't realize how kind of... It went well
for the
first few ones. And I had a... First one was killer, second one died. But then I had some more good ones. And I didn't know what I wanted to do back then.
Go up every week, several days probably, hopefully, you know, and keep chugging along at it.
I think it was just an excuse to avoid the work, but there was a little bit of me that didn't want to get locked into that. And like, I'd seen, like, stand-ups, I had a lot of respect for stand-ups. It's hard grind, and like, it's tough work, just, you know, going from place to place to get yourself established. But I always wanted to do stuff with other people. I'd rather be Monty Python than being Eddie Izzard.
So you're doing it now.
But I mean, I've got there now. Probably if I'd taken the stand-up up, that would have been a route for me to get into that earlier, but who knows, you know, like, you can't, I'm here now.
I think that's one of the few regrets when it comes to things I haven't tried to do creatively. That is the one
stand up.
Yeah. I kind of like touched upon it a little bit by going to these storytelling nights where there's no pressure to be funny, but if you are, it's kind of a bonus, you know. So I tried to see if I can be funny here, and that worked pretty well. But I think the pressure of a stand-up stage would be a bit too much. But
yeah,
and you know, definitely feels a bit too late to start doing that as well now, you know. So it's something you probably should have done when you were 18, and
I think it helps when you're younger and you've got balls of steel and like. Nothing sort of phases you in quite the same way.
Yeah, because you're not going to get anywhere until you're like 30 anyway, if you start by 18, probably, you know, because you...
I don't know. I don't. Yeah. Well, never too late.
Yeah, for most things, but yeah, yeah, I see what
for
you
most
mean.
Things, yeah. Except for this. Never too late, except this one.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's too late to be a pole jumper, maybe, if you...
Yeah, sure. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
Most athletic things.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, yeah. That's, I know that there's never anybody older than me on the pitch or in the sports I'm watching.
Really?
Like, it's ground. There's maybe a few goalkeepers, I don't know.
You were in a sporting situation kind of in a movie because you were in Borg versus McEnroe.
I was in Borg versus McEnroe, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a question Shia LaBeouf. That was fun. I just played a reporter who's questioning his... He's playing John McEnroe.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But did you shoot that here?
That was shot here. They shot that here and...
In Stockholm, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Half and half.
Because I know people who tried to get into that thing right. In Stockholm. Yeah,
they did half and half. Mm. Which happens, seems to happen a lot of productions these days. Like, there's a lot of stuff in Germany that shoots here for half and then Germany. So I think they're covering their funding in part.
But okay, the future, otherwise, you're... Going to be seen in Carnival Row.
Yeah, Carnival Row is coming out at the end of this month, August 30th. Check
and,
it out.
And what else is coming up?
Oh, fuck. I've got Devil coming out.
I'm playing, oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a demon in that.
Demon.
A demon, yeah. I managed to get a name for that. I was, I think it was Mammon, actually.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, which is the god of... Heavy. Well, the demon of, yeah, money. Which didn't really, but anyway. And yeah, that's it. That's the things coming out at the moment. Have I got anything else? Nightfall's still playing in the UK and other places.
Oh yeah,
season
sure.
two
yeah, yeah, yeah.
With Mark Hamill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you work with Mark?
I did work with Mark Hamill. Yeah, I did some lines opposite him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's super lovely. Yeah, he was kind of he's all British cast. Well, mostly British cast on that, and he was kind of enamored with the British actors. I think because ever since he's Alec Guinness, he's kind of just. Been in love with them, but
probably, and he got to speak like you guys in Nightfall, so he has to steep himself into into what that is. Yeah, I've heard. I haven't seen Nightfall yet, but I've heard that he is really good.
He's great. It's like, he's great.
Some people say like this is the best thing Mark Hamill has ever done acting wise, maybe apart from the Joker voiceover thing.
Yeah. No, he's super cool, super nice, super lovely. And his character was awesome. His character Talos was really, really great. The acting is great in that show, though. Like, the performers, the cast is wonderful as well. So, yeah.
Is there going to be another season of Nightfall?
We'll have to... I don't know. I'll have to watch this space. But for me, it's kind of like focusing on the comedy and things like that. Because it's that thing of... it's not secondary, but like, you know, it's just that thing of going and working, you know, you've got to, the theatre's so good for that and the comedy and the improv of keeping working.
Yeah.
So staying fresh and sharp and not doing your nut about the fact, you know, you're not in anything at the moment. You haven't got anything coming up. I mean, I've got a little bit of shadow play as well. That's worth checking out. That'll be probably about a year. So, but that looks super interesting.
So. Yeah. But that's lighter on, yeah. All right, so where do we find you when we want to check you out and social media stuff and things like that?
Yeah, sure. Check me out on Instagram. I occasionally post amusing things on there. Pretty things as well. yeah, that's where I am. But I mean, like we talked about, I haven't got a website or anything. I'm just kind of...
No, but you're on Instagram as at Jim High.
Thanks, Peter. Yeah, I am. Jim.High. Yeah.
Dot High.
Yeah. All right. Jim.High, yeah. Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Mm. Anything else you want to mention or plug?
Don't
or
want to plug? Hello, Mum.
Shout out to Mum.
Yeah. Check out Blood, Love and Rhetoric if you're in town, if you're in Prague.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're good. We do dark, twisted stuff, which lots of people seem to like.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks, Peter. It was a lot of fun. Cheers, man. Yeah.
Cool. See ya.
Yeah.